Hello and welcome to episode 44 of the Desi Outsiders podcast. I'm Ankita.
And I'm Meenal.
And this week, we are in conversation with the one and only Gurmeher Kaur. Since February of this year, a photograph of her holding a placard that says, "Pakistan didn't kill my father, war did," has been plastered all over the news and media channels in India.
She was scrutinized and criticized by celebrities and directly compared to the antagonists of the world. The title anti-national as a suffix to her name was at the tip of everybody's tongue. Although most people didn't even have the slightest context into how and why this branding was taking place.
What resulted were her receiving rape and murder threats that even forced her to take a break from school to leave her city and ensure her safety.
So today we will get the full backstory from the lady herself, and Gurmeher will tell each and every one of you listeners, including myself and Ankita, what actually happened and how seriously she was threatened. So without further ado, let's jump right into the show.
Gurmeher, when all hell broke loose around you in the beginning of this year, we noticed that you never actively came out in your own defense. You maintained quite a dignified silence, and you let your many intellectual supporters do the talking for you. And you agreed to be interviewed a couple of times, you wrote a blog post detailing your perception of your own identity, and now you're writing a book. But for the first time, we're here to listen to your entire story so far, in your own words, in your own voice. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad we're doing this. Yeah, I remember the only reason why I did not give a lot of interviews was I was noticing how anything I would say would be taken out of context and be picked apart and be debated on, whether it was, even if it was one single tweet. So I felt like, you know, might as well just stay silent, let everybody go out and say whatever they have to say, let them vent out whatever frustrations they have, whatever issues they have with anything that I've said, and I will talk about myself, but then I'll talk about myself in my own words. I will not let any reporter or any media person turn my words to fit their own narrative.
We've been hoping to speak to you for about 4 months now, Gurmeher, and we're very glad to finally have you on our show. And in the past 4 months, your life has drastically changed, hasn't it?
It has, it definitely has. But then the funniest thing is nothing in my day-to-day life has changed, except that I have more work, except that it's, you know, now that I'm writing a book, that I have to edit the book, I have deadlines for that, then I'm working on a lot of different projects. Co-founded a fellowship, and it's not my day-to-day life hasn't changed because I'm surrounded by such wonderful people who haven't changed their perception about me post everything that's happened. So within my college, within my university space where I am, within my friend circles, I think all of it is same, except that I've become a little more busier, and except that I haven't had a single free weekend ever since. But not much has changed in that aspect. But then when you see it from a bird's eye, everything has changed.
So Gurmeher, I wasn't born and raised in India, unlike Ankita. And so this whole story really frazzled my mind, especially because if we dive into the politics of this whole situation, it can get very complex. And when I Googled your name, every single article mentioned one political party or another, and I just couldn't trace it back to the very beginning. And I really hope today you can educate me and all our listeners around the world and set the story straight, well, at least to the best of your ability, and keeping it as simple as possible. So if we go back to a more low profile, peaceful time, even before you lost your father at the age of 2, I'm certain you don't have any clear memories from that time, but can you tell us a little bit about your family life while Captain Mandeep Singh was still alive, what his position was in the army, and how his unfortunate demise came about? Because this is where it all started, didn't it?
So yeah, I mean, I don't have a lot of memories. I barely have any, and the ones that I do have are very limited. That's exactly why I was so keen to be a part of an Indo-Pak peace project, is because I realized how it has been so many years. It had been 18 years, like the year that I became a part of Profiles of Peace, and, you know, other Aman Ki Asha and Aghaze Dosti and these various Indo-Pak peace projects. So they became the year I became a part of these. It just hit me that, you know, we cannot afford to keep having wars with the same. We just cannot afford to, not why why just the same country, but like we just cannot afford wars anymore. You know, there's so much more that we can do, and then so many lives are lost. And of course, you know, it came from an emotion that I think all my life I'd kept wishing, you know, what if, you know, what if he was here, what if he was you know, all your life you're just thinking, what if? And then when you're a little grown up, you're like, what if there was no war? He'd still be here. Like, let's go to the, you know, root cause of it. And then eventually you learn so much more. You grow as a person. You realize that there isn't really... Like, I don't want to go into the political aspect of it. But then there's like so much... What I was noticing around me was there's so much internal hatred for the other than love for their own country. And I never understood where the hatred was coming from. Like, I remember when I was a child, I had a reason to hate the other country. I had a reason to hate the neighbor for whatever reason, for my own personal tragedy. And I realized if I can move over that and, you know, listen to Zayn Malik and have the biggest crush on him for the rest of my life, like, if I can move over that, why can't we have Fawad Khan act in our movies? Why is it so problematic? And, you know, just from like that simple thought, I eventually got to a point where I realized that it's that we need to eliminate people-to-people hatred so that eventually at least maybe we'll have a better future, you know, 30, 40 years down the line. But yeah, this is where, you know, this is exactly where I was coming from. But I think, and it's strange how when the video actually came out, when, you know, this, the video was not the only thing. It was a huge, it still is a huge movement that is working, that is still functioning. So when I collaborated with them and when I did bring my story out, is one of many stories that they had done, there was no backlash. Like, there, nobody said anything. What is strange is that after a year later, when I take a stand against violence by a certain political party, is when the backlash came. So I really question, is the backlash because my stance on my anti-war stance offends you, or is the backlash because my anti-you stance offends you? I mean, that's what I keep wondering.
But Gurmehar, what we are going to do with this interview is actually so that everyone has a clear idea. We're going to go into each and every aspect of this chronologically so that everyone just understands what really happened. So, which is why we started from the very beginning as well. So I want to go back and address the hatred that you mentioned earlier. You know, you grew up with the pain of not having a father, and to add sort of insult to injury, as a child, you probably felt that, you know, your dad was snatched away from you. As you said, he was taken away from you in a war. And I can only imagine what that felt like. So at the age of 6, when you said that you tried to attack a woman in a burqa because you thought that all Muslims were Pakistanis, I'm actually curious to know where you as a child may have imbibed this sort of hatred. Because, you know, was it from your family, your school, news and media? You know, because a little child does not naturally hate. Hatred is something we all learn along the way. So what stemmed this?
Which is so true. I mean, I agree with you. I feel like it's at the age of 6, it was not one person, it wasn't boom, but it was like a collection of everything. I remember I would go to the park and I'd play, and then, you know, people would ask me, so whose daughter are you? And I'd have to, you know, go through these answers. And then since I was living in a cantonment area, eventually even the children who were like probably 5 or 6 years older to me, so they had an idea. So they would tell me things. And then, of course, you know, every time I remember going to a friend's house and they would be playing war movies. They would play Border every weekend and they'd watch with their father. And like, I remember, and it's strange that I've never been able to watch any war-related movie till now. Any war, I just can't sit through them. So, but I remember as a child, so, you know, that's where I picked my ideas from. I was like, okay, and then it's so strange how, even now when I think about it, it's so strange how as a child I had so much hatred just because it was piling on inside me because other people were telling me to hate. And there was hatred for anything, any Islamic symbols or anything that relates a person to a certain religion. So every time I'd see a burqa, I was like, okay, this means Muslim, this means Pakistani. So do you see the connection? And it's on such, during such, you know, like when I was 6 years old, and in my head, I'm just connecting, you know, 1 + 2 + 3, right?
Sorry, Gurmehar. And from what I've seen and read, you make a very powerful point about not shedding the same light on all Pakistanis. Like you just said, you know, you saw someone in a burqa and automatically your mind went, okay, she's Muslim. And you also stress that not all Pakistanis are terrorists. And in the same way, you know, not all black people are criminals. And this is a recurring theme throughout the world with many cultures and with many societies.
I'll agree with you. And I think this whole problem of us versus them is beginning to start all over again. And not just here in India. I feel like, you know, and it's so strange how politicians all over the world just, and hatred is such a simple emotion to evoke, because hatred does not come from a pure place of hatred. It just comes from anger. And the anger could be about anything. This is what I believe. You know, you could be angry about not having the favorite meal. And then eventually you want to vent out. You vent it out on the other. So yeah, I mean, that's where I'm coming from. I feel like, and it's such an easy emotion to evoke. And such an easy emotion to build on. Because if a child who's 6 years old can have so much hatred, I cannot even imagine a man. Like a man who's middle-aged, who's seen so much. And it's really sad that the world has come to this point where hatred is acceptable, and any talk about love and peace is supposed to be the villain here.
So Gumer, as millennials, we're surrounded by sensationalized media, and I think you have seen it firsthand. You've been attacked from all angles. The internet and our community and social media especially influence a lot of our ideas. And yes, there are many layers involved in how this sort of stigma can arise, but do you think there is a specific way in which we can put an end to this sort of attitude?
Of course, I feel like it's so simple. Good, just go back to your moral science, you know. I remember, 10 years ago, just go back to your moral science stories. It's very simple. It's good versus evil. Good beats evil. You know, love over hate. It's just so simple, you know. And it's so sad that we've just lost. We just cannot even go back to our basics, you know, just basic sense of morals. So I think it's more of an introspection thing. You know, a person needs to really understand where they're coming from, if that is the kind of person they want to be.
And I think all the media and the internet has sort of contaminated all these simple values that we're raised with. So if we all do go back to these stories that you just mentioned, it might take a lot of years for us to actually change as people, as generations, and eventually as a nation.
That's true. I mean, but I think I'd like to disagree with you there, because 5 years ago when I was 15, or let's say 10 years ago when I was 10, I really believed in those values, and I was surrounded by people who believed in those values. And if in 10 years those people, from believing in basic, like believing in just the basic sense of morals, can all of a sudden be so full of hatred, just in 10 years, I think the opposite can happen too. It's just about introspection. It's just about having this conversation with yourself. You know, what is it that you want to be? And I feel like somebody, and which is where media, and which is where everything else comes in play. That somebody needs to take a step and start reminding people of what is wrong and what is right, and you know, giving them an option of choosing one of the other side. So I think when the video came out, that's exactly what I was doing. I was like, because there was so much, so the environment was so, it was full of hatred. So when I put out the video, that's what I was saying. I was like, if I can get over my hatred, why can't you? And I feel like more people, because I think media is the same for everybody else. You know, it just depends on you, what you want to put out there. So if you want to send someone a death threat or a rape threat, or you want to send anonymous hate messages, or you know, body shame them, then that's your choice. But if you want to empower other people, then that's your choice too. So it all comes down to an individual level, where, and of course, you know, some people need to decide, and there has to be some influencing force. So if you're somebody who's in place of power, or you're somebody who comes from who has a story to tell, might as well go out there and do it.
So this video that you talked about, you alluded to earlier, it was called The Soldier of Peace, Gurmeher Kaur, and it came out in April 2016 as a part of the Profile for Peace campaign with Ram Subramaniam. And it showcased you sitting in a bare room, holding up 36 placards one after the other, telling the story of your father's martyrdom and sharing your campaign for peace between India and Pakistan. So can you tell us more about this campaign and why you were involved with it?
I had been a part of the campaign for almost a year till we eventually made the video. And I remember being a part of it because I feel like there was so much hatred on the internet. I had liked the page that said Profile for Peace, and I was following it, and I was following all the stories. It was beautiful. It was, there were stories of people from different countries living abroad, living in London, living in US, eating the same food together. Listening to the same music, finding your own people, your podcast is called, the Desi, right? So you're finding the Desis abroad. So that was all, it was about, it was just so heartening to see it. So this one day, the same page called Profile for Peace then posted a picture talking about peace with, just talking about normal peace and everything. And somebody commented, so why don't you ask the soldier's family, do they want peace? And I really felt like commenting because, this person had aviators on and gel in his hair. And he probably has no idea, like, what life was like for a soldier. But then they were using our name and our tragedy to demean such a beautiful movement, and somebody else's beautiful story of friendship across borders. And I just commented, I said, I am a soldier's daughter, and I think this video, this story that the page has posted is beautiful. And then I eventually got in touch with Ram, and then we did a few more projects. So yeah, so, I started being more involved in the activities because I realized how toxic the environment was around me, and there was only one way to, counter it. And because for every beautiful story that Profile for Peace was putting, there were 10 people saying, what about the soldiers? What about the soldiers? What about the soldiers? And I'm just like, what? I will tell you, if there was no war, we'd still have our parents here. So, if this prevents further wars, and if this prevents that there won't be any other child who has to go through what I have to go through, then might as well. Plus, this is beautiful. So, anyway, eventually, I got in touch with him, and then after my board exams, I went to Bombay for an internship, and that's when we made the video.
And back when it was released in 2016, you said that the response to this video was really different to what is the case now.
Oh yeah, so true. Oh, so true. And it's so strange because even in 2016, the video had reached about 1 million people, and 1 million is a huge number. And there were a few people here and there, saying something or the other about me, like mild hate, but there was just so much love. And, it still did get media coverage, and still I did do an interview here and there because of the video, and it was all great. But it's so strange that only when I raised my voice against violence, this video was brought up again, and the whole topic of nationalism started all over again, out of nowhere. And the strangest thing is no one was talking about violence on campuses, which is so much more important than a 20-year-old's nationalism stance. I mean, there are, on one hand, and it's so strange because we don't know that there is outrage, but we don't know what topics to have an outrage about. Like, I would rather, if I was in the media's place, or if I was in any, and me being the same person, I'd rather imagine the whole country being this angry at the fact that 17-year-old and 18-year-olds were being pelted with stones, then as angry as they were with me. Just imagine how different the university spaces might, somebody must be. Must have been under pressure to change the scenario for universities. But then since nobody talked about that, there's still violence on campus.
And Gurmeet, when you made this video, when you were holding up the placards, how old were you? Because you showed a hell of a lot of maturity in that video.
I was 19. I think in the first or third placard, I talked about how old I was at that point.
Okay, so just 8 months after that video went out in February of this year, so in 2017, on a seemingly normal weekday, you returned from college to hear some disturbing news. So what exactly happened? You just mentioned that there was violence in your college, but can you just go into that and tell me exactly what you heard and what the situation was exactly?
Yeah, so now my college is in the southern part of the city, and the main university campus is in north. So that is about an hour's distance from, between both the campuses. And now a lot of my friends, and because of the video, I had quite a following, and, I would do a debate and I would do events within Delhi University circle. And I remember in the morning, one of my friends, they were in a group and they asked me, Kurmeher, there's this thing in Ramjas, there's a protest. Do you want to come? You have some 6,000 followers on your Facebook. If you talk about it, it might help us out. And I was like, I just have to go. I really want to go get a coffee right now. And I have classes which I can't bunk. So you guys go and let me know how it went. So when my classes ended and I came back from my coffee shop, just finishing up my project, and it was February, and Feb is when you have to submit all your internals. So I was just working on my internals, my phone was switched off, and everything was on airplane mode, I had no idea what's happening. I come back, I turn my Wi-Fi on, and my phone just goes, I get all these messages of those same girls who would ask me, Gurmeet, do you want to come to the protest? But all these girls were charged, lathi charged, and all these girls were pelted stones. Some of them were pulled by their ponytails and, dragged.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and dragged around. And all of them, and now they are my friends, right? They're my age. There are people that I hang around with in college, and they were detained in the police station post 6 p.m., which wasn't allowed. And it was so sad because a lot of hostels in Delhi have a curfew for 7:30. So if you don't make it to the hostel in 7:30, the gates are shut. So there were all these girls standing outside their hostel gates with twisted wrists, with pulled hair, and with lathi marks on their backs, with blue bruises. With no place to stay. God. And I was so mad. And for what? Just because they wanted to go for a silent protest, for a 17-year-old, 18-year-old student's protest, and this is how they come back. Just because they did not agree with a certain... Yeah. And it was pretty sad. And I think at that point, I felt like I have to do something. If not for the whole call, then at least for my friends, because otherwise I'd be a really shit person.
And Gurmeet, can you just tell us what this protest was all about?
So this protest, there was, Ramjas is this college in North Campus, which is a brilliant, brilliant college, which is one of the top colleges in India. So they had an event where they invited students from JNU to take lectures. And now there's another student party, the ABBP, does not exactly agree with these anti-national students who were invited. So they go to the principal and they're like, you'll have to cancel their permissions because we cannot let these people talk. So it was a fest. So usually when fests happen, everybody just sits in the auditorium and it's lecture after lecture or performance after performance. So it's not like someone's actually going there just waiting for one particular performance. Everyone's just hanging around in the auditorium, waiting for what's coming next. And then the invitation to those speakers from JNU was cancelled, Umar and Shaila. And they never made it on campus. They never came to Ramjas. The invitations, everything was cancelled. There were still students sitting in the auditorium. Now, the student organization that was opposing the lectures comes in, locks the auditorium doors, and starts pelting stones on students.
Oh my God.
Now, the thing is, if you've already done with permissions being cancelled, if these people never showed up, if you got what you wanted, then why would you go and hurt students just because they were hanging out in the auditorium, just because they were sitting there having a cup of coffee, or just because they were sitting there eating samosas?
Plus, isn't it their right as students to be able to listen to a lecture that they want
to
listen to?
Of course, of course. Yeah, exactly. Even if they want to listen to something, why not? And that's exactly what the protest was about, you know, that even if we did listen to whatever lecture we wanted to, what, so what? It's our right. So that's where the whole freedom of expression was came in play. And that's what the whole protest was about, which I did not go for initially, because I don't know why I didn't go, but then probably because I had a few lectures and, you know, I was like in my own zone. It wasn't after my own friends got hurt, I realized the gravity of it. And I felt like I cannot not be a part of, you know, I cannot not stand with this, with the students. I just cannot sit there and watch, yeah.
And Gurmeet, the you know, you were saying that people were pelting stones and pulling people's hair. Were these people involved with the ABVP?
Yeah. A lot of them were identified in the videos that were taken. A lot of them were identified as members.
And if my understanding is correct, the ABVP is the biggest student body organization in India, and they receive backing from the BJP, the Bharatiya Janata Party, which in turn is the current ruling party of India.
Okay, so I just want to summarize everything for people who might have been listening to this and just feeling like it's getting too complicated. The ABVP wanted to protest against a lecture that was going to be delivered by Umar Khalid and Sheila Rashid, and they were both from the highly political Jawaharlal Nehru University, JNU. And these two people didn't even show up for the lecture after they heard of the violence, and the invitation was cancelled and they couldn't come to the campus. But despite that, this party wreaked havoc on college premises. They destroyed college property. So are you aware of any action that was taken against the ABVP, either prior to your tryst with the media, which we'll get into in a minute, or even after you were dragged into the spotlight? Were they ever held accountable for their actions?
I don't think so, not at all. I mean, till the end of it, they were like, they had some or the other argument, which is exactly my point. You know, imagine the outrage. People don't know what to get angry about. Like, please get angry about a student party, you know, hitting your kids, and Ramjas is one of the top colleges with the highest cutoff. Now, people who make it to Ramjas are the smartest kids in the country. The kids who've actually scored 97-98%, which is, they are top 800 smartest brains in the country, and then they are being pelted with stones somebody felt there to be a need for them to, you know, oppress, just to show your own power. Just because you have power, you can hit people, and just knowing that, you know, you're going to get away with it. And guess what? They actually got away with it. They did. No, and nothing happened. And guess who was, and when you're talking about accountability, the next day when people were protesting, my friends got hurt. Anyone who was sitting there protesting was pelted with stones and charged, lathi charged by the Delhi police. So just think about it, you know.
And you go to the prestigious Lady Sri Ram College of Arts, but this incident took place in Ramjas College. And although both of these colleges come under Delhi University, you saw this violence exhibited by ABVP. You heard your own friends got physically abused in this attack, and you decided to take a stand against this violence. Now, Gurmeet, how did you take this stand? What exactly did you do?
It was so spontaneous. It was so spontaneous. I could not do anything because it was 8 p.m. I couldn't get out of my hostel. I couldn't help my friends. I couldn't find place for them because there was only so much I could do physically. And then I realized, you know what? I have 6,000 people on my Facebook. Why don't I just, you know, and I had done placards before, and I had seen that, you know, it gets a lot of, I'd seen that it gets picked up very easily because it's something, that's how you show resistance, because I really believe in resistance against oppression. So, you know what, I felt like the easiest thing, if you cannot go out there, at least put up a placard, show solidarity, stand with your friends. And it wasn't supposed to, I did not expect anyone, I didn't expect everything to be scaled, to just blow up that way. Because all I was trying to do was stand with my own friends, or stand with the students. All I wanted to do was be a part of this resistance.
So, You had a Facebook profile picture which showed you holding a placard. What did this placard say?
Oh God, I don't even remember. Because it was so spontaneous. Oh, wait, I'll have to. I think it said something as "not afraid of ABVP." That was the main line, and I don't remember what it what it said, because it was so spontaneous. Because I just remember jotting something down, taking a picture and posting it. And I did not look at the picture over and over again. I didn't read what was written because it just came from the heart and was there for everybody else to read.
Okay, so I just want to summarize again for anyone who's listening. This stand that you took through your Facebook profile picture, it showed you holding a placard, probably saying that you were afraid of the ABVP. And this was very similar to the Profile for Peace campaign video where you held a placard telling the story of your father's martyrdom and claiming that had it not been for the war, your father would have still been alive. And then suddenly social media was flooded with screenshots of you holding one particular placard that read, "Pakistan did not kill my dad, war did." And this was just one placard out of the 36 that you held up in that video. And obviously in the full video, there's context. There's a narrative and you slowly arrive at the point. But that one placard was taken out of context, plastered on the news and media channels to such an extent that many Indians that I personally know of didn't even know what was actually going on, and they thought that the whole controversy surrounding you was about the Profile for Peace video that you made back in April 2016. And like you mentioned, suddenly the ABVP issue was non-existent and the only focus was on that one placard from almost a year ago, which really didn't have anything to do with the issue of violence at this university. So what do you think actually happened there? How were the tables turned so drastically?
This is something that I keep questioning, and this is something that I get angry about a lot. So, you know, some days when I'm just going in a car and it's a long distance, I'm traveling one place to the other and I go back, you know, just think about what happened, and I just keep wondering that why, like, how did the tables turn? Why, how did I become the focal point of a conversation where about a situation that I wasn't even present in? How did nationalism become the topic of debate? Why were we not talking about violence on students? I mean, it's just insane how our priorities have changed. Even for the media, you expect these media people who've written books, who've done PhDs, who are great at what they do, to know what to talk about, you know, to know what topic is more important than the other. But I feel like just bogus. This outrage about nonsense things, but not important things. Like the other day, there was just recently, the Gorakhpur tragedy happened, and for the first 2 days, no one had an idea about it. But all primetime debates were debating on whether all schools belonging to different religious, having different religious affiliations will hoist the Tiranga on Independence Day or not. That was the debate, not the death of 60 babies due to lack of oxygen. I just feel like, you know, we're so lost in the narrative, we just don't know what to talk about. Or maybe we're doing it on purpose. I don't know. But it's really something people need to start questioning.
And the media also didn't help in any way, right? Like, I personally feel that there was a lot of irresponsible journalism that was going on because they even dragged your aging grandfather into all of this.
Definitely. I think journalism has it. Like, I feel like ethics do not exist in journalism after what I've seen, because I feel like at that point it was all about TRPs. It was all about TRPs. Nobody, which is why I did not want to talk. Which is why, you know what? I'm not going to give you anything. I'm not going to say anything so that you can take it and post it on your prime time debate with a headline and then discussing that one sentence I've said. So I was like, I'm going to stay quiet and just make up whatever nonsense you want to make up. And it is so strange that, and I still think it's strange, and I still think it was very irresponsible. And well, I mean, today I am here, you know, talking to you, and I'm in a position where I know people will hear what I have to say. But then again, it's just, like I said, we really need to see what our priorities are as a nation. Because these acts of ignoring important issues in the country is very anti the nation, is very anti-national. I don't know whether my statement was anti-national, but like, we as citizens ignoring the fact that our top university, our top college, we are letting violence, we're justifying violence there on 18-year-olds. Well, that idea, that act is very anti-national in me.
No, it's okay, Gurmer. I just wanted to ask you, how did your family cope with all of this?
No, my family knew when the video had come out. My family knew exactly the kind of kind of things that I was doing. She knew what all the projects that I was part of. And you know, there's something, and there's a reason why I had that video. It is because there really is no place of place for hatred in my family. You know, I was never taught to hate. The moment my mother realized that there was so much hatred in my heart, she eventually, you know, she started telling me about stories, started telling me about religious tolerance. I eventually started reading much better books. And I feel like I grew up in a very healthy environment. Very privileged environment, you know. I had wonderful education. Today I'm studying in a wonderful liberal arts college where anything I say is people will hear, people will listen. They may not agree with it. They will come with counterpoints, but no one's going to put a tape on my mouth and say, shut up, I don't agree with what you have to say. So I feel like in that sense, I've been so privileged. There has been so much privilege that comes, that has been in place for me to be the kind of person that I am today, to have these kinds of thoughts, which I understand that a lot of other kids might not have had. Maybe they don't have parents who notice whether their kids are hateful or not. They might not. My mother was extremely sensitive towards anything that I said or did. And, you know, if there was anything she found that was unhealthy, any emotion that was unhealthy, she would talk me through it. She would counsel me through it. And I think a lot. So with my family, I think we were very strong throughout it. We just shut everybody down and like stayed together. We spoke about things. Honestly, all of us, we were just sitting in our living room and wondering what the world is, why has the world gone crazy, is exactly what we were wondering, yeah.
That sounds like a very healthy relationship that you have with your family, Gurmeer. I'm happy to hear that at least you had some support from one side. So, Gurmeer, now we're approaching that part of the interview that I'm sure none of us are thrilled to speak about. And this is the part about what people in positions of influence have said about you after that one single screenshot went viral. I personally was, and still am to some extent, quite infuriated by the whole brouhaha that came up. And I think that if people fail to see the unfairness of it all, they just don't have a good head on their shoulders, because what actually happened 6 months ago still plays back in my head as well, and also makes me question a lot of things.
So let's go back and, you know, let's start with the most famous tweet where this all started. It said, I didn't score 2 triple centuries, my dad did. It was a tweet by Virendra Sehwag that went so viral that it had a ripple effect, and it led to the creation of many other similar memes, some even going so far as to show Hitler saying, I did not kill the Jews, gas did. How did that make you feel?
Honestly, I was like, oh, like the first time I saw it, like my phone just went berserk the moment I started getting notifications to post that tweet. And the only reason I ever had Twitter was to get a global citizen pass. It's so strange because I never used Twitter before. That was just some app lying in my phone with a random account in it. And that was about that. And when Sehwag tweeted about it, I think my first reaction was I didn't understand what had happened because there were so many notifications. I really had to go look for the tweet. I could hear Virendra Sehwag said something. I don't know what he said. So I went and I looked, and my first reaction was, you know, definitely of, I could feel my heart break. Because these are people, and there was, of course, Randeep Hooda too, who encouraged it. And, you know, Randeep Hooda is somebody. So Highways is my favorite movie. I'm a liberal arts student.
Oh, mine too. When I saw his retweet, the first thing I remembered was Highway.
Exactly. Because, you know, because Highway was about a young girl who's our age, who's going through so many deep emotions. And it was so raw, so beautiful. Yep. And, you know, I'm a liberal arts student. I like to look into movies very deeply. I like to talk about them, think about them. I really enjoyed it, and I loved Highway, and I loved him in Highway. And when I saw that, it was heartbreaking. I cannot say I was angry, because, you know, these are people that you look up to. I've been a tennis athlete. I've been a national level tennis player for a very long part of my life till I was 18, and eventually had a knee injury. And Virendra Sehwag used to be in the Kings 11 Punjab team. So I remember making plans when I was 16 years old with my friends, you know, going to the stadium, cheering for Sehwag when he was batting. And, you know, all those memories came back to me. And I was like, this man who I, you know, right now have a horrible throat. I remember screaming for him during those IPL matches. I would have a horrible throat then when I would come back. And, I think it just stained a lot of those memories for me, that tweet. And I think it just ruined my favorite movie for me. And it ruined my favorite, one of my favorite actors for me. So I think that was pretty heartbreaking.
And Gurmer, this might be a bit too personal, but for someone you looked up to so much, like Virendra Sehwag, can you say that maybe perhaps you've lost respect for him?
I've thought about it. You know, I've really thought about it. I was like, maybe I'm just going to give him the benefit of doubt. You know, I think maybe he was trying to be edgy on the internet, on the interwebs. I think old people need to really not be so cool. Maybe he was just trying to be funny. Maybe he was just trying to be witty. Maybe he, I don't know. I'm just going to give him that a benefit of doubt.
Well, I think Gurmer, like you have a very big heart to say that. And I think that I respect you a lot more now for telling us that you've given him the benefit of the doubt, because I will be completely honest on this podcast, on the show today, and I don't have any respect for him anymore. Yes, people can do things on a whim, but when you have that kind of power, and not just the power, but all these years of experience of being in the media, being on the TV, I think you should know by now that saying something like that isn't the best idea.
Yeah, there might be ways to come back and justify it, but then at the end of the day, you were a young girl, and this was someone with influence who just decided to make a joke about you, which resulted, if it was just that, then maybe everyone would just forget about it, but it resulted in such a ripple effect and so many memes that were created, so many heartbreaking memes.
I mean definitely when you're someone with that amount of following and that amount of power, you really need to be careful with what you say. And you know that, and which is exactly what I was talking about before. You know, at this point in time, we have to understand what we want to be, what kind of person we want to be. So when somebody like Virendra Sehwag is out there spreading, you know, hate and making fun of a younger, like a 20-year-old, I'm probably definitely 3 decades younger to him. You know, if he was to have a child, that child would be my age or closer to my age. Yes. So, you know, when you're that popular, when you're that famous, when you're in that position of influence, what do you want to use that position for spreading, you know, love, or for spreading hatred and making fun of people?
Exactly.
But on the flip side, there were so many people that came out in your support, including Shashi Tharoor. But even he mentions that you're too young, and that with age and with experience, you will learn to construct your ideas in such a way that you can fend off similar criticism in the future. So now that you're working on a book, you're writing a book, has this whole experience in a way shaped the way in which you share your thoughts and ideas?
Like I said, honestly, this book, I started working on this book when I was 12. And even when this book which is why I'm doing literature right now. I've always wanted to write. I've always wanted to be an author, which is why I chose to write a blog about everything and about my identity. Then, you know, speak about it, because I'm better at writing. I'm not an orator. I'm not a media person. I'm not that person who does interviews. Now, I guess maybe I am. I'm just like learning how to do that. I'm just trying to fit the mold they've presented for me. But anyway, I was never that person. So now that I'm writing this book, I don't think I'm talking about the incident at all in this about the story that I'm telling, because the story is the story of my family. And it's more about why I am the way I am, and not because of, and it's not, it doesn't tell who I am. I feel like once you go through the whole book and what I've written, you'll understand where my stances or where, how I feel about things come from. And I think maybe after you go through the journey with me, in the book, something might change within you, which is what I'm hoping. But yeah.
And Gurmer, we just spoke about Sehwag and Shashi Tharoor and all the people who came up to speak either for you or against you in this issue. Similarly, the Folgaard sisters came out and they mentioned how they didn't agree with your message about the war, specifically the word war killing your father and not Pakistan. You spoke about how Sehwag was an idol you look up to. And even the Folgaard sisters, I don't know if you looked up to them or not, but I don't know if they had an influence in your life. But was it intimidating to see celebrities talking about you? And whether they were in your support or not, did you ever feel intimidated at any point?
Not intimidated, not at all. I think I'm going to, which is where I I think I'm a very arrogant, a very cocky person just in general. I think very highly of myself. I think I'm extremely smart. Yeah. So I think I'm extremely smart. You know, I'm like, I'm this person who used to be a national level athlete in her own right, somebody who's worked very hard. And, you know, I think that I have a lot of love for myself and I have a lot of love for people. So did I feel intimidated at any point? Not really, not intimidated. Was I hurt? I guess as a young girl, I was definitely a bit hurt here and there. But more than that, I was just annoyed and disappointed at how the world was reacting. Because, you know, this is not the country that I had imagined. My country, our idols never punched down on younger kids. And they knew what to say. So I think if there was anything I was going to tell a 15-year-old me or 11-year-old me, was to be ready for what the world is going to turn into.
In an interview that I came across, Geeta Fogart specifically says, so this is me quoting, she said, "For me, the nation comes first and then the people come second." Now, when I heard that for a minute, I thought, well, it's the people who make India great and we're all responsible for what this nation is and becomes in the future. So people seem to see Bharat and India as a chunk of land they want to claim ownership over, but they forget that Indians, whether it's you, me, Ankita, whoever, we are the people that make India. And I think that people have started to forget that we are all collectively responsible for what India is today. And nobody, you can't just point fingers at people, but collectively we all have a responsibility.
Which is so true, because for me, my country is my people. You know, because while there's a beautiful idea of a nation, you know, while for me, the nation does not limit itself to just the boundaries that we've created or just the boundaries that we've learned how to draw in a geography books. You know, it's not limited just to the geography. It is way beyond all that. I think it's all about the people. It's all about the students. It's all about the babies. It's all about the children, you know, about the women, about the men going to work. You know, I think my nation is about the stories. And my nation is about its struggle. My nation is about, it's about the fight that, you know, it's about the people who fought for it. And, you know, it's about that emotion. And it's not just about the boundaries. I think boundaries are the last thing that I associate with my nation. I think I associate the spirit, the cultures, the colors. I think for me, that is what makes India India. And not just the borders.
So after the whole tryst with celebrities talking about you so much, then came the political twist where political parties saw this as a chance to maximize on their, you know, publicity. So it all started with one Kiran Rijiju from the BJP who insinuated that other political forces were corrupting your mind. His exact words were, "Freedom of expression is not a license to shout anti-national slogans in campuses. Criticize the government, but don't abuse the motherland." Now, Gurmeher, can you please explain to me in your own words how you have abused our motherland?
I have no idea. I don't think saying I don't want war with other people is abusing our motherland. I think it's just so... I really wonder, and these are the people who are... I don't want to say anything politically incorrect, but... Okay, these are the leaders we've chosen for ourselves, so we cannot differentiate between pro-peace and anti-nation statements. But okay, fine. And I think I had no idea who Kiran Rijiju was until a reporter called me up and said, "So what do you have to say about Kiran Rijiju?" I was like, "Well, I'm going to have to Google him and then I'll tell you what I think about him." He's like, "He said something about you." And then I was like, "Are you sure it's a he or a she? Because Kiran is a very female name." Then, of course, I had to Google him. And then the moment I wrote his name, there came a series of news reports that he's been saying something about me. And then he's like, "Who polluted this girl's mind?" I was like, if for you, peace is pollution, then I feel like between the both of us, it's not me whose mind's polluted. But yeah.
And he also said that Kargil war must not be exploited. You know, I'm just trying to understand, why do you think this person thought you were exploiting the war by talking about your father's untimely demise?
I have no idea. I wish I had a clue. But, you know, as a 20-year-old girl, for me, all this political drama is, it's all beyond me. For me, I just think when people say things like this, some things that are this hollow, they just end up sounding stupid. For me, this was all sheer stupidity coming from the high up.
So this reminds me of all the controversy around the date of your father's unfortunate demise, which, to the delight of many, was a month after the war officially ended, and you were called a liar by many prominent people. And again, going back to the irresponsible journalism that we discussed earlier, some media channels went so far as to report that your dad passed away a whole decade after the Kargil War ended. They actively tried to strip your late father of his martyrdom. Now, that must have been extremely painful for you and your family.
Definitely. And I think it's so... And you know what? And this is another article that I wrote. The service period for Kargil War did not end with the Kargil War being, officially over on the 26th. The service period went on till October. So technically, you know, when we're talking about technicalities, he did pass away during the Kargil period. And it was only 10 days after the war. And you know what? Honestly, if I, to all those people who were saying, she's a liar. You know what? If the war ended on 26th, you should have sent him back on 26th. I wouldn't be saying these things. You didn't send him back on 26th. Should have. Yeah, I would have loved it if he came back, but he didn't. So here I am. I'm going to talk about peace. I'm going to speak up for children like me. I'm going to speak up for them. And I'm going to say, you know what? We don't want your dirty politics and to have our fathers go fight wars for you, because this is something your egos cannot manage at a diplomat, because your egos don't let you fix things at diplomatic levels. We're not sending our fathers to wars. It's been 70 years. Just find a solution already. And it's not just for India, it's for Pakistan, of course, too, and for Europe, for like just wars in general.
So coming to the last part about the politics aspect of this, Gurmeher, I just want to address the fact that a BJP MP, Pratap Simha, compared you to the world-famous underworld Don Daud Ibrahim. And, well, you've been compared to Hitler before, so I guess this was not such a big deal. But it's not surprising to me that BJP turned against you, considering how ABVP gets its backing from them, and you spoke against the ABVP. But on the flip side, you received support from Congress for the very same reason. Rahul Gandhi came out and said, "Against the tyranny of fear, we stand with our students. For every voice raised in anger, intolerance and ignorance, there will be a Gurmeher Kaur," which was really nice of him. But imagine if instead of the ABVP, it was a student body backed by the Congress that created this issue at Ramjas. Invariably, I'm sure that your stance would have been exactly the same. You would have had the exact same reaction. But do you think that Rahul Gandhi and the Congress would have still supported your freedom of expression, and that Pratap Simha would have compared you to Daud Ibrahim if that were the case?
I mean, first, I don't understand why somebody would compare me to to Daud Ibrahim, considering I am talking about non-violence and peace, which is the exact opposite of whatever Daud Ibrahim symbolizes, stands for. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, which is ridiculously stupid, which is, I think these are such careless statements, just because we have to say something about the girl, and we cannot really, there's no argument for non-violence and peace. Let's just say whatever we want to, which is, like I said, which makes me wonder, which makes me really question leadership these days. But then coming to, my stance wouldn't have been different. Had it been NSUI, had it been ISA, had it been any other political party that had done what the ABVP did, hit students, my stance would have been the same. Because I think my stance wasn't particularly against a party, but my stance was to stand with my own girls, with my own friends. I don't know about Rahul Gandhi standing up for me, but honestly, I think had the tables been turned and it was some other party, I think the question of nationalism wouldn't have been here. Maybe we would not be talking about nationalism. We would just be talking about violence, non-violence. I think the whole issue wouldn't have blown up this much. My previous video would not have been brought up. I'm assuming. I don't know.
Well, Gurmeher, there were several replies to your video, some of which I have to confess, I personally closed within 5 minutes, 5 seconds, because quite honestly, I just couldn't take it. But I'm sure this must have taken up some space in your mind, and it must have upset you to see that people were taking the liberty in trolling you. And You did mention earlier that you decided not to engage in any of this and you just went back with your family and you took a step back from everything. But when it did start off and when everything did heat up, what was the point where you became saturated and you said, okay, I'm not going to engage and I'm not even going to react?
I think it was when the media showed up right outside my college and right outside where I live. And I was like, and I realized by then it was just a TRP thing. By then it was just a sensationalizing thing. You know, like, let's sensationalize this news because we have nothing else to talk about. Because, well, you know, why talk about violence when you can talk about nationalism and, like, have politicians give you such juicy, interesting, insightful things such as Gurmehar is like Hitler and Gurmehar is like Dawood and, you know, let's send Gurmehar to Pakistan and let's have this conversation. Why have conversation about 17-year-olds? But anyway, I'm not going to talk about that. I think I've been ranting about it for a very long time. But yeah, I feel like by then, they were just it was just nonsense. And I really just wanted to get out of the whole debate, which basically had no point. I was like, if you're not going to talk about violence, then I'm out of here. Talk to me about the real issue. Don't talk to me about bullshit. I think maybe that's a way. Don't talk to me about hollow things. Talk to me about violence. I'll talk to you. You know, try defending violence. Then we'll talk. You know, do not change the topic to what I said or I didn't say, because what I said doesn't really matter, because I'm only a 20-year-old student and it's my opinion. And if my opinion can disrupt your political narrative to that extent, I really question your political narrative.
And Sheryl Sandberg, the COO of Facebook, she spoke about the sudden loss of her husband and her journey through which she managed to stand back on her feet again. And when we listen to your story, for some reason, she comes in my mind. And it's because in her book, she specifically talks about resilience, Gurmehr. And she says that this quality is like a muscle, and this muscle has to be built over time. So nobody can just sort of be resilient. You become resilient through experiences and by exercising this muscle. Now, to Ankita and I, you came across as very resilient, and even just as you explained that you just didn't want to engage, and that just tells me that you're a very strong-headed woman. And have there been other experiences in your life that shaped you to react in this way, to have this calm demeanor?
I think the reason that I am the way I am is probably because I played a lot of I used to compete, like I said, I used to compete at a national level. You know, I was a tennis athlete. I used to play a lot of tennis tournaments, and I think tennis is a kind of game that mimics life. You know, it's the ups and downs, and you have to keep calm, and, you know, you really have to focus on that one point. You don't have to think about the whole match, just focusing on your footwork, focusing on your strengths, knowing what to do. I think, and, you know, learning how to breathe between points, learning how to control anxiety, learning how to control anger, I think when you've done that every single day since you were 10 years old till you were 18, I think it just builds in you. At that point, I knew that I had to. I had played tournaments in situations where I was being anti-cheered, which is similar to trolling, you know. So I remember when as a young girl, I was being anti-cheered in a match that was very important to me. How I blocked that noise out and focused on the point. I think even right now, I just use the same tools that I had from being an athlete for so long. I just blocked the noise, focused on my breathing, and decided to go into my own head instead of listening to everything else. Because if I listened to every single person, it was just noise.
Okay, so before we continue, I want to quote something that you yourself said a while ago, which is that if a narrative can be built up against a student who questions violence against others and can be blown up so much that it displaces the real issue, then we're facing a tough time ahead and we need to accept that. Now, to me, this whole incident, it almost looks like someone with a teeny tiny ego decided to take revenge on this girl, this woman who claims that she's not scared of this big organization or this big student body. So let's shut her up. Let's troll her. Let's make a meme about her. But it didn't end there. You know, people sent you rape and murder threats, and they commented these obscenities under the very same profile picture that you put up protesting against the bullies. And as a result of these comments, these threats, and the repeated abuse both you and your family faced, you deactivated the Facebook account, you stepped down from your Save DU campaign that you started as a part of this, and you even left Delhi seeking safety for yourself. So you must have been broken at that point. You know, how did you, how would you describe that time of your life? What was going on in your head?
Honestly, at that point, I wouldn't say I was broken. I think at that point, I was strategically deciding what I should do next, because I knew there was somebody strategically deciding what they should do next. So I did not go back. Wow. I did not go back to back home because I was so scared in Delhi. The weekend, I was, on Tuesday was the march, and I was home for the weekend. And I had come back on Monday to attend the march. You know, it was never that I was scared. But then on Monday, I realized that there was no one talking about violence, which is why there was a march, you know, talking about violence. I decided if I step back, at least for that one day, they will have, at least it, when that march happens, the media, the country would be forced to talk about the march. Had I gone to the march, they'd still be talking about, oh, Sugar Meher went to the march. She's siding with the anti-nationals. She's siding with the left. She's siding with this political party. She's siding with that political party. I just decided if I don't go to the march, and that march remains a student's march and not my march, will you talk about violence? And they did. And they were forced to have a conversation about why there were 3,000 students out on DU streets. Those 3,000 students, I understand, were not out because of me. Those 3,000 students were out because they were done with this nonsense too. They wanted to be heard. And I knew that if I... And also because my mid-semester breaks were going to start in 5 days. It was Tuesday, and on Saturday, my college was supposed to be off anyway. So I just went home. It was that simple.
Mm. You know, when you went through all this, everything that we discussed so far... it's pretty clear that for just a 20-year-old girl, it was quite a lot to take on, right? So do you have any regrets when it comes to this particular incident? Do you regret anything at all?
Do I regret anything at all? Not at all. I don't think so. I really don't think so. I think it was needed. I think what it did was just expose the hollowness of the narrative, of just everything. I mean, I'm pretty sure, and I'm glad, you know, you go on Twitter today and you see all these leaders talking about peace and talking about dialogue and talking about, you know, having, or talking about Kashmir and Kashmiri people as their own. So, well, I think peace is becoming the new cool, and I think it wouldn't have been the case had there not been such a huge storm in my life. I mean, and if that's what it takes, I don't think I regret anything. If I would go back in time, and I had the option to do it all over again, I think I would. I think it also comes from a place of service for people. I don't think I'd ever be able to live with myself if I decided not to stand up for my friends when I had the option to. I'd want to go to bed easy, knowing that I'm doing things for, like, knowing that I'm using my voice for the right cause, even if it might not seem right within the political narrative or within what's more popular. So if peace is not a popular stance, was not a popular stance back then, and I got a backlash for it, despite knowing that it's the right thing to do. I'd still do it.
And Gurmeh, some of the actions taken by the ABVP and the benefactor seem to have been with the full awareness, probably, that there would be little or no consequences. And I feel that we all experience this sort of thing on a small scale every day, you know, from the playground bully to internet trolls. And in fact, Ankita once wrote a blog post about her grandmother on her blog, Ankita.inc, and people from her own family handpicked quotes from there and accused her for being disrespectful. And I believe they did that because they felt that they held power over her and would be successful in making her submissive. So what advice do you have for someone who might be going through, maybe not exactly the same thing, but maybe through something similar? How can someone have such resilience, patience, and more importantly, Gurmeh, from what you've told us today, grace when dealing with these kind of people?
I think with me, I just kept holding on to this one thought and this one fact in life that there's nothing that is permanent. You know, everything is constantly changing. I remember being so heartbroken when I had a knee injury, and I thought my life would be over. There's no way from here. My career is over as an athlete. I would never be. I don't love anything as much as I love playing. And I remember being devastated. I was so sad. I could not get out of the bed for months. But then I made it through that. You know, I went to college. I got into the course of my choice, and I survived that. And I realized if that pain was not, and that was the toughest thing I had gone through. So the thought that I kept holding on to was that if I could go through that, I can go through this as well. If that incident passed, if that moment of sadness and depression was not permanent, even this is not permanent. So I knew that, you know, eventually with time, this will change and this will not exist anymore. And I just held on to that idea that in 6 months time, hopefully it won't exist. Like, you know, in life, happy moments are not permanent and sadness isn't permanent either. It's just constant up and down. So yeah, I think that's what I did. So if I would tell anyone, I'm just going to tell them that nothing is permanent. So don't take everything so seriously. Life is funny. It's going. Some days you're going to be extremely happy. Some days you're going to be extremely sad. You're just going to have to get through it with grace or strength or just with good humor.
Yeah, so Gurmeh, this is something that I saved for the last. You know, I myself am the daughter of a veteran and my dad was still in service during the Kargil War. In fact, I'm sure he was your father's contemporary, but in the Air Force. Now, our dad's generation of military men, a lot of them were directly and actively involved in the Kargil War and other disturbances that our country had with Pakistan. So a statement like yours saying that Pakistan didn't kill your father, war did, it could be taken a little personally by people who have seen firsthand the behind the scenes of such a messy war. And that happened too. Like, a lot of people took it personally, and a lot of, you know, people like this are who took it a lot personally. So I assure you that many of them are listening to this conversation right now. So I want to know what you would say to them. How would you justify your simple, peaceful claim that you see war as the main problem?
I think if you're taking that, I actually agree. Like, I understand why someone would take it personally, you know. I wasn't there. And I respect everybody who was there. I honestly cannot. And I don't think if I have the strength to live with the kind of memories that they live with. Which is why, you know, that taking that one little thing, one little placard, one little line out of context just changes everything. Because from there it moves on to why I believe there should be, you know, there shouldn't be any war, because people have to go through these things. You know, people have to live with these memories. People have to live with the aftermath of it. Whether it is someone who was in the war or whether it's someone who lost their family in the war. So when war happens, you know, definitely for political reasons, or because, you know, war doesn't happen because, oh my God, I hate the other person personally. War happens because this conflict. I think it's about the bigger picture. For me, the video, or for me, the statement that I made, it was keeping in mind the hatred that was in normal people's hearts, that, oh my God, I just hate a Pakistani, because there was this whole issue where every time under a music video or anything, you'd see a Pakistani commenting, and then there used to be an India-Pakistan debate, oh my God, I hate you. So it was just so much people-to-people hatred. I just feel like it's not that every single person of Pakistan is out there for our blood. There's so many other peaceful people too, and we just completely ignore that. Mm. And I think it's a situation of war that puts us in that space. And also, when you talk about war, if we saw brutalities, the other side saw that too. You know, it wasn't one-sided for us.
Yeah, so I think what you're trying to say, Gurmeet, is what we, if we just go back to the very beginning of our conversation, and it's just about not generalizing, right?
Yeah, it's not about generalizing. Plus, like, just when you take one placard out of context, it's going to sound wrong.
Exactly. So we shouldn't use one placard to generalize. We shouldn't use one Pakistani to generalize. We shouldn't use one black person to generalize. And I think that's a very strong and powerful message that you're telling our listeners, Gurmeet. And I just want to end on a happy note, because we've gone into some gory details here, and we've gone back to what's happened to you over the last year or so. So let's end on a happy note. And I would like you to tell us about your new book, The Small Acts of Freedom, which is coming out this January in partnership with Penguin India.
Yeah, so Penguin is publishing it, and I'm extremely, I'm very excited about it. So the book is going to be I just submitted the first draft yesterday, and it emotionally wrecked me, because I had to go through all those emotions all over again, and, you know, feel those things all over again. But yeah, I'm actually very excited to tell the story, because this is something I wanted to do since I was a young child. Since the first time I read Anne Frank's diary, I knew I wanted to put my story out there too. Because Anne Frank's diary moved me, you know, from a 13-year-old girl's point of view, the World War. And I felt like I had a story to tell too. Maybe not as strong as Anne Frank's, but a story nonetheless. And today that's happening. So I'm very excited about that. And if it could touch one life, I think I'd be happy.
Well, we're very, very happy for you, Gurmeet. I'm very proud to see, you know, a strong woman like you to come out and stand for what you really believe in. And as I said earlier, with such grace and such integrity and such honesty as well. So thank you so much for coming on the show today, Gurmeet. It was really important to us to try and share your story in your own words. So no media over here, no Arnab Goswami, no nothing over here, just you, me and Ankita. And I'm so glad that you shared everything. And again, with honesty as well. So we hope we've been successful in doing just that.
Yeah, thank you so much. I had so much fun talking to you. It was almost like therapy.
Oh.
Also, Gurmeher, before we end this, if any of our listeners want to get in touch with you, how can they go about that?
Tweet. I'm always on, like, I'm not always on Twitter, but then I read almost about everything. So yeah, I will get back.
Okay.
And what is your Twitter handle?
It's Meher Tweets.
So thank you once again for agreeing to talk to us, Gurmeher, and we wish you all the very best for all of future endeavors.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Gurmeher.
Thank you.
And thank you, dear listeners, for joining in on our conversation with Gurmeher. At the age of 20, this girl has been to hell and back. We need to be very careful with the things we say to youngsters, because these things could have a long-lasting impact, and not always a good impact, that'll make them want to come out of it and succeed in life, as was thankfully the case with Gurmeher. We are really happy that she was one of the few who did have the resilience to fight back and rise from the ashes.
We hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as we did, and you can find Gurmeher on Twitter at MeherTweets. And while you're on social media, do check us out at Desi Outsiders. You can drop in a mail with your thoughts, feedback, or questions to mail@desioutsiders.com. And as always, please rate and review the Desi Outsiders podcast on iTunes and tell all your friends about us.
So until next week with yet another conversation, I'm Ankita.
And I'm Meenal.
And we are the Desi Outsiders.